Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Okay. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, I'm Dr. Lisa, in case you can't recognize my voice, and I'm interviewing Dr. Toni about her hormonal journey. So a lot has changed since she had her daughter, Frankie, and she's going to discuss with that kind of her transition over the years, the symptoms she's been experiencing, what she's been doing to help. And then we're also going to cover, there's different times where you can go through menopause. So sometimes you can go through it early. We're going to discuss what that looks like and what the definitions are for the different categories of menopause and how that can influence your health risks. So Toni, how do you feel about being interviewed today?
Oh, I feel great, Lisa. It's interesting because it's just one of these pieces where it's like, okay, if I share what I'm going through, like we have been, Lisa, for the over, 2 years now, then I just want other women out there to feel less alone and feel less isolated and to really kind of understand all of the different nuances and pieces that kind of go with going through perimenopause and going into menopause and what's normal and what's not, right?
I know. And I don't know if there is any normal, right? The only thing that is predictable is that perimenopause is unpredictable, right? So if you're listening to this, your stories and your journey is probably going to be a lot different, but it just shows you that your transition can be different than what you think and even what other healthcare practitioners think, right? I think, Toni, your doctor
definitely
wasn't quite sure or believed when you said something was going on, but I'll let you unpack some of those details. So, Toni, where should we start?
Well, we can just start with this, I guess, is my official announcement that I'm in menopause. And Lisa, I hope you'll still keep me as a perimenopausal mama.
Of course. I think that'll be another, a perspective from the other side, if you will, of kind of what to expect then. And then as I go through, menopause, I'm still in perimenopause, then we can become the menopausal mamas.
Sounds great. Yeah. It's been interesting. And I think what has really been helpful was even an episode. It was one of the first episodes that I did way back in 2020. I don't even know if it was the pandemic yet. And it was with Dr. Kari Klein, who really was really incredibly open and vulnerable and shared her journey. Her hormone journey, her postpartum journey after having her son. And she shared how, she quickly went into menopause after having her son. And Kari was always an inspiration for me because she had her son in her early 40s before I had Frankie. So I always kind of, kept her as an inspiration for me in terms of my fertility journey. And so she inadvertently then kind of ended up also an inspiration for me as I quickly went through perimenopause and into menopause. So it's interesting that I didn't realize that that was the case when I first talked to her about it. And we'll definitely share that link in the show notes because, again, it was such an early episode. I think it might be really challenging even to find that episode if you're listening to this podcast episode on, something like Apple or even Spotify or anything like that. So we'll put the link to that in our show notes for our website. But yeah,
so go through our archives. And then Tony, so if you could just let people know how old you are and how old were you when you had Frankie, and then we can start the journey there if that works for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm 46 and I had Frankie when I was 41. So and I'm sure I've shared before on the podcast that, like, looking back, I definitely had symptoms that could be related to perimenopause before I had Frankie. So I think that I started, you know, having hot flashes back in my early 30s. I mean, I can remember being, I'm sure I was like around 37, 38. I remember being in a particular relationship before I met Frankie's dad, that I would be sleeping in this really warm environment and I would just wake up with ridiculous hot flashes. Like, I would get up and open the door in the middle of winter just to like get relief from it. So, and I was having regular periods. No issue with that. And then once I had Frankie, then, you know, I definitely had some challenges with breastfeeding. And so I was pumping and I kept pumping until she was one. And then I ended up getting a few periods after that. So, you know, I had like, and I only ended up having three regular periods after I stopped pumping. And then I started having these huge gaps in my periods. So, and this was already after I had talked to Dr. Kari. So then I realized, okay, like, this is perimenopause. And I wasn't too disturbed by it. I wasn't too freaked out by it at all. And actually, it was kind of a really pleasant surprise, Lisa, because I really expected to get heavier periods after I had Frankie. You know, there was a family history of that. And so I was really happy about that, that I wasn't dealing with that because I already had pretty heavy periods before she was born. So I was, almost, you know,
so there was
really
some
thankful.
Silver linings in there. Yes.
totally silver linings. So I wasn't too worried about it. And it was kind of nice not to have to, you know, always worry about what was going to happen with my period, especially after having Frankie. Like, it's nice not to have to, you know, have a pad or a tampon or a cup handy, or, you know, worry about, you know, leaking, bleeding through clothing, that kind of thing. You know, I had had heavy enough periods before Frankie that I already experienced that. It's not fun, right? Mm-hmm. So at that point, especially since I was having those big gaps in my periods, I really, and we were already doing the podcast, I really wasn't too worried about it. I knew that, you know, there was a lot of unexpected to come with perimenopause, including cycles not being regular and periods not being regular. And so then it was just like, for me, it was just really clear to me that I was in late perimenopause. And I already started to have some hot flashes that came back. And I really don't remember when that happened. And with enough of, and again, you know, you can go back to our hot flashes episode where, you know, I played around with different nutrients, different herbs, and got to a place where my hot flashes were really well managed. So I wasn't worried about that at all.
Were you getting them still, or were you getting them like certain times, or did you have other triggers? What did you notice?
It was really off and on. And of course, I definitely noticed that, you know, I had triggers with alcohol. So I definitely reduced my alcohol intake. And again, which is, you know, a good thing, lots of side benefits to that, as we've talked about before too. But I really was really watching, again, kind of temperature, especially sleeping, that kind of thing. Cause I definitely noticed that the hot flashes, when they were on, could really interfere with my sleep. But making sure that I had like the right nutrients, I really found that certain antioxidants like grapeseed extract was really key. You know, using maca was really great. There was points where glycine was really helpful. And I've still noticed that like they do come back. So it's not like it's, I found a magic bullet and a magic solution for them. It's actually truthfully right now, even still something that I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. And they're also at the point where it's not like they're really intrusive or really severe or anything like that too. So
that's good to hear. Yeah. Cause we talked about all those different kind of presentations that women have, right? They might get a lot in a short amount of time. Some people might get them for years. So we'll find out as you go through your journey, kind of what category you fall into, but it sounds like they're on the milder side. So it's not like too embarrassing, it sounds like, or you're not drenched maybe like you were before.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's only been a few times where I've been like soaked and really had like night sweats. And thankfully that really hasn't been the case too much during the day. So again, I haven't worried about it too much and don't really think about it too much. And so much so that I wasn't even thinking about it when I was talking to my doctor, my family doctor, about how I wasn't having periods. So since I forgot to mention that I actually had hot flashes, she didn't even think that I was in menopause. She literally actually said, don't worry, it's not perimenopause, which I found really funny. And I didn't argue the point with her, again, kind of given the name of the podcast that I'm doing with you. I just
kind of sure about where we're at, right? Yeah.
I was really sure. And I didn't feel the need to, you know, correct her or anything like that. And I was just really thankful. I mean, she, you know, it's one of those things where, especially with, you know, doctors in the conventional medical system, I mean, they have a certain paradigm and they have a certain set of tools that's available for them. And I'm not the kind of person that wants to, you know, paint them with a negative brush because of that. It's just a matter of, you know, I recognize that, you know, she was coming from where she was coming from. And interestingly, coming from a place where she also was a similar age and had a daughter of a similar age as well. So, you know, she is probably on a completely different journey herself as well. But, you know, thankfully she's, again, a really fantastic doctor in that she referred me to a gynecologist without a second thought. Like I hadn't even thought of that. And she just automatically did that. And so, you know, I had visited that gynecologist again when I still wasn't in menopause and I had some blood work with my family doctor. Again, my family doctor was great enough to already had sent me for some really basic hormonal blood work that really, again, showed that I wasn't quite in menopause. So, you know, my estradiol levels, which is really like the main estrogen that you can test for in blood, wasn't low or anything. So it was one of those pieces where when I went to the gynecologist, she said, okay, well, here, let's just get you to do some more blood work to see where things are at. And I haven't done that yet. So
we'll expect that your FSH is high, right? Which is what happens in menopause, and maybe the estrogen's a little lower now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, and I'll definitely expect that because yeah, my FSH hasn't always been in normal ranges, even you know before I had Frankie too. So it's kind of one of those things where you know I was you know taking all of those numbers in the context of kind of where I had been before and not necessarily exactly what to expect with everyone else as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can tell people, listeners, you might not, you know, you probably heard of FSH. That's the blood test you can do to see if you're in menopause or not. And it can fluctuate from month to month, cycle to cycle, or, you know, even if you're not getting a period a bit, it's called follicle stimulating hormone. And the higher that number is, the more likely you are in menopause. So the FSH is a hormone the brain releases, the follicle stimulating hormone. And as you have, you know, less eggs, because, you know, every time we ovulate, we get, you know, less eggs too. So as you have less eggs, things aren't happening in the ovaries like they normally would. So the brain starts to yell at the ovaries and that message is the FSH. So that number goes up, right? So if you're like ovulating, you've got a lot of eggs, your FSH is in like a moderate normal range, but it goes high when you're approaching menopause and in perimenopause. And it, you know, stays pretty much elevated once you're in menopause.
Yeah. And again, things can fluctuate when you're in perimenopause because there are some cycles where you don't ovulate and there are some cycles where you do ovulate. So it, again, it's one of those things where, again, testing those kind of hormones can be helpful. And it's a snapshot of where you're at on that particular day in that particular moment. So you also,
yeah, Tony,
again,
would you get, yeah, definitely. And Tony, would you notice some cycles when you were getting kind of the sporadic periods, you might have PMS, and then other cycles, you might have kind of more menopausal symptoms? Did you notice that? Because that can happen, right, in perimenopause, where it's like, oh, I feel like my breasts are tender, I've got major PMS. And then another cycle, it's like, oh, here's my period. And, well, maybe I had some hot flashes. So that can be common, a common presentation as well.
Yeah. And, you know, looking back, Lisa, I really can't remember any major PMS or like breast tenderness or anything like that. And I mean, it is one of those pieces where that may have been happening, but I was still kind of in the throes of you know, postpartum when I was having periods. You know, Frankie was one, so I would have just been running around after her. And a little bit stressed, you know, really truthfully, I didn't really find that my postpartum journey, even after, you know, she became a toddler, was necessarily easy. So my memory's a little bit clouded on that one, truthfully.
Yeah, there's a lot going on at that age group. So it's, yeah, totally. I think a lot of women can relate. Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, and then the pandemic happened and I was never a great sleeper. But my sleep was super impacted once the pandemic started. And there might have been a piece where that was part of also perimenopause and my hormone fluctuations as well. Because again, sleep insomnia can be a real challenge for women in perimenopause too. So that was, and again, I played around with a number of different things in order to support my sleep during that time. And again, we've talked about that a number of times with our sleep episodes as well, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely. So we'll link back to those so you can hear some of the tools that are commonly used and you can discuss with your naturopathic doctor to see what's best for you. But Tony, do you feel like, how do you feel about being in menopause? Like, I know sometimes there can be grief, there can be celebration, it can be all of the above. Like, how is it impacting you?
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, Lisa, I think most of the time it's just been really positive. And I think a big piece of that is the like emotional and spiritual work that I've been doing for years. And I really, you know, started even before Frankie was born. I think that was really, again, part of my fertility journey before becoming pregnant and before becoming a mom. So I think that's been incredibly helpful. So, you know, I definitely continue to kind of do that kind of work for myself. And I plan on doing that work for the rest of my life, you know, using neuro-linguistic programming, hypnotherapy, timeline therapy, you know, different aspects that just really allow me to just access, you know, a certain level of acceptance and peace. Instead of really getting kind of stuck in, you know, what I think should happen or what I want to have happen and, you know, being stressed out and kind of suffering around that, I really just choose not to stress out over being in menopause. And again, I already mentioned that amazing silver lining of not having to worry about all the things related to periods that Yay! I used to worry about. And I mean, it's interesting. There is a piece where it's interesting when people ask the question, oh, okay, are you having another child? Like, you know, that's, I'm sure that, I don't know if you get that very often, Lisa. It's super
I used common. To soon after Stuart was born, but maybe I look a little older, so nobody asks me that anymore.
Yeah, I guess that happens less and less as the kids get older, right? But I mean, I still get that question. And yeah, and for me, it's like, okay, well, you know, my body decided for me and my hormones decided that that really wasn't happening. So whereas, you know, I often use that phrase like one and done, which wasn't, and not to say that it was just my hormones that decided for me, because again, I found postpartum really wasn't easy. And so I do feel a little bit grateful that my body and my hormones decided for me, so that I don't have to make that choice on my own to be like, okay, am I going to go through this again or not? You know, and like, so much props to those parents out there who have 2 or 3 or 4 or more kids, because like, I don't know how you do it, literally. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even as I was like getting my notes ready for recording this, I did get a little sad about it. And the fact that it's like, okay, yeah, like I'm done. And I won't get that opportunity to have another child and have all the wonderful, positive, joyful pieces of that. So, and I mean, and that's how it is. And again, it's like, yay, no more cramps, no more bleeding through clothes. And the fact that I also really have worked on my health and worked on myself, and I'm not experiencing a lot of, you know, crazy symptoms or anything like that, I'm super thankful about. And again, I'm going to continue to do my work to make sure that that's the case, you know, physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Let's celebrate that, Toni. You've really laid the groundwork to do, you know, to set your body up in a way that it can transition in, you know, the best way possible. And again, these things can be out of our control, but leading up to perimenopause and through menopause, we just want to nourish our bodies. We want to fuel properly, move properly, sleep properly. So every little bit that you do can help, right? So you don't have to suffer. And you mentioned the mental, emotional, spiritual component is so key too, right? Because it is kind of like a rebirth. Now you're, you know, not in those reproductive years. So you're bringing forth kind of yourself, not related to having other kids. You know, I guess back in the day, children would have been older and you would have had more time to focus on yourself and your journey and the rest of your life. But, you know, we all have young kids right now. So the timeline has changed for that, but it can be a bit of a rebirth, but also some grieving I think people go through. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And I do have a solution if you want another kid, Toni.
Oh my goodness. What is it, Lisa?
Surrogacy. We'll link to that episode. So people are out there and, you know, they got caught off guard by early menopause, or, you know, they wanted to have another kid, but their body was not able to. There is an option, right? And we did an episode on surrogacy. So we'll link to that. What do you think, Toni?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, thank you. And I love that you mentioned that, Lisa, because yes, there's other options. And that's also really a big piece that I'm actually kind of grateful about. And sure, like hindsight's 2020. So if I would have realized that I would be going through late perimenopause in my, you know, kind of early mid 40s and be in menopause at age 46, and actually truthfully had a conversation with my mother about it as well, because I always assumed that my mom went into menopause at age 50. And there's a huge family history component when it comes to the age that we go through menopause. But then actually when I shared with her that I'm in menopause, she actually was like, oh yeah, I was probably around 46 when that happened too. And I was like, okay, well, if I would have realized that, and if you do have a family history of going through menopause early, and early menopause would be between ages of 40 and 45. Premature menopause is before age 40. You know, if you do have that family history of where your mother or grandmother went through menopause early or premature, I mean, that's really important information to have. And then that can really help to kind of guide decision-making around fertility if that is an option. So there is that piece where I'm really thankful that I was, again, able to have Frankie, and that happened in that kind of period where I could get through that before actually getting into later perimenopause. And I mean, there's other factors as well that can impact You know, whether you are going to go through premature menopause or early menopause, like there's family history. There's, of course, smoking and other kind of chemical exposure, like chemotherapy or radiation exposure for, you know, things like cancer. Difference, again, surgeries, of course, will impact that, especially, again, hysterectomies, surgeries to remove ovaries if needed. But even other health conditions as well can impact a woman's risk or predisposition to be going into early or premature menopause, like autoimmune disease, other immune issues, like especially HIV and AIDS, chronic fatigue syndrome, or myelogenic encephalomyelitis. Holy, I managed to get that out.
You did it. All right.
Yeah. So again, there are some kind of health issues that can, you know, have people be more predisposed or have a higher risk of going into early menopause.
Definitely. And, you know, we don't want to go through menopause too early. And you're out of that definition of early menopause because you went through at 46 and early is 40 to 45. Premature is under 40 years of age. But if you go through it too early with that low estrogen, that message, estrogen is like an anabolic hormone too, kind of like a testosterone, right? It keeps our bones nice and strong. So if estrogen levels, you know, drop early, you're in early menopause, your risk of osteoporosis goes up. And we did not the last episode, actually, and that can, you know, lead to potentially a fracture, a hip fracture, which can then impact, you know, your life in the long term and even increase your risk of early mortality. So we definitely know estrogen's key for bone health. It's heart protective as well. So if you go through menopause too early, you're not getting that same protective effects, but there's other things you can do. So it's not all doom and gloom and out of your control, but it just increases your risk a little earlier, right? So we don't want to go through it too earlier, but granted, it happens. And sometimes you need to go through it earlier if you have your, you know, uterus, ovaries removed, you have a hysterectomy, you know, because of fibroids, for example. And if you go through earlier premature menopause, you might have menopausal symptoms for longer. Maybe they're a bit worse. You know, everybody's different again, so it's not predictable. And we know estrogen also helps with mood. So there can be, you know, lower mood, even things like more joint pain, right? That can be a sign of low estrogen, you know, changes to the skin, etc. But it's not all doom and gloom because there are ways to support your health, whether you're looking at hormonal replacement therapy, using different herbs or supplements. There's options out there and they can be used in a safe way. They're not, you know, as scary as we once thought. So we can do a whole other episode on that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, that piece of, you know, menopausal hormone therapy is something that I do keep in the back of my mind. And again, it's not like I can be thinking about that for years and years before choosing to do that, because that then the benefits aren't really there. And I don't feel rushed to consider it. It's interesting. I've kind of kept it as an option, but I'm one of those really, I think, extraordinary, different, unique, strange women where I've never been on any kind of birth control pill or exogenous hormones. Now, other than using progesterone, and not progestin, but progesterone before and during my pregnancy with Frankie. So it is kind of one of those things, because especially after doing the bone health episode that we'll link to, and even the episode with Dr. Andrea Prue on, you know, muscle health and strength, I wish that I would have been more proactive about doing some strength and resistance training to support my muscle and bone health while I definitely still had estrogen. I may still have enough to really build on that, and that's still a goal this year. And again, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, hindsight's 20/20, and it would have been nice to do that. So I definitely encourage all those women out there when you're still in perimenopause to, again, really put that as a priority too, and do as much as you can. right now. And yeah. for now.
But you're doing your dancing. So that's great. Yeah, the tap, yeah. right? That gets yeah. to like just putting a bit of that like strain or kind of pressure on the bones also helps them get strong, right? So you're definitely not inactive, but I can see yeah, the strength training. That's a missing piece, I think, for a lot of women because it, you know, we were more drawn to like in our generation, right? Cardio, machines, that sort of a thing, which, you know, there can be a time and a place for cardio, but we're realizing strength with cardio, they can be paired together for a more short, efficient workout.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love going for walks and hiking and that kind of thing. And, you know, a little bit more diversity in how I move my body could really probably be beneficial. So, and I mean, and so far, no big issues with like vaginal dryness or anything like that happening. And again, thankfully, we know that there's options around that as well. So I'm definitely kind of keeping my options open, depending on, you know, what comes up for the rest of my life in menopause.
Definitely. Yeah, there's definitely choices and supports out there. And I love that you shared your story, Toni. I think this could be a new, you know, every few episodes or several episodes, we have a woman share their journey about going through perimenopause and into menopause, just so you can see different perspectives and different things that helped, just to kind of normalize the abnormality of it, if you will.
Yes, so unpredictable. And again, you know, every woman will have a different experience, you know, it. So, you know, what one woman experiences is not abnormal than someone else. It's just there's such a variety. And I think it's really important for us to be aware of it, especially since we do have a tendency to compare ourselves to other people and say, well, what's wrong with me? Or wait, is this weird? Is this strange? What's going on? So it can really be helpful and provide some peace of mind so that you're not stressed out about what you're experiencing if it's different from, you know, friends or other people out there.
Definitely. I love that the Dr. Kari Klein episode really helped to kind of normalize your experience too. So just hearing one story can shift your perspective for sure. So anything yeah. else you want to share, Toni, before we move to the second part of the podcast?
No. And again, it's just that piece of like, let's talk more about this. Let's share, because again, Dr. Kari sharing was such a positive influence on me. I hope that there's at least a little bit of a positive influence on me sharing my story today with anyone else out there listening.
Oh, I know there will be, Toni. So thank you for being so candid and open. I think it's a great forum where we can talk about these things and not hide certain details or symptoms. And it's good to hear there's lots of supports and you've done the legwork. So
yeah,
way to go, Toni.
And every other woman out there deserves the same kind of support and recognition that there are just so many different options of what you can do. So yeah.
That's right. Awesome. Well, Toni, you just shared an amazing story and I know you're doing a great job as a mama. So can you share your super mom moment this week?
Yes. It's interesting. And maybe this is a piece of going into menopause, but I also think it's just a piece of coming out of the pandemic as well. I went for like a first kind of coffee shop concert with a good friend of mine, a good friend where we used to go out to live music concerts all the time, like we used to, Lisa, when we were in school.
Yes.
Oh. And it was just so amazing to get out with other adults in an adult venue, doing an adult activity. It was just a wonderful catch up and got to see, again, you know, other people that we used to see at music shows. We both I realized and my friend realized that we really realized how much we missed going out to see live music and how much we really missed just connecting with other people. You know, in that way as well. And seeing, you know, friends and not even friends, even just acquaintances, people that you would, you know, just say hi to. It was just really fantastic. And so it was just so great that We actually carved out the time because it's just so easy to say, oh no, I'm too tired to go out. I'm not going to do this. We just made the effort. We had the support from our family to look after the kids when we went out. So yeah, it was fantastic. And it's just like, oh yes, I need this. Like, we need this as moms. We need that time to just really do those activities that really, again, fuel us up, recharge our batteries, and just really kind of fill our cup and fill our heart.
I love that. So yeah, the connection and then the music itself, right, can be so healing. So we call that a twofer.
Yes, <for one. laughs> definitely a twofer, Lisa. Now, Lisa, I know you are an amazing mom. And can you share a mama mess up with us this week?
I can. There's always plenty, right? So I was like, which one do I pick? So yesterday we had an amazing visit with my in-laws. We hadn't seen them for a while. And of course, you know, he had like a huge lunch. So I'll give him that. But then he had, you know, an insane amount of sugar and chocolate. So when we got back in the afternoon, I was like, do you want a snack? And he was like, no, but he was busy playing his game because he gets, you know, 2 half-hour sessions of computer games on the weekend. So he was absorbed into that. Normally I would set out a snack for him so he could kind of nibble on it when he was ready, but I just didn't do that. I was feeling a little lazy. And so he didn't get a snack, and then it rolled around to dinner time and it was time to, you know, eat and sit down and stop playing with his Hot Wheels, but he was in the hangry zone and he was, you know, not having, you know, he didn't realize he was hungry and he didn't want to stop playing, and he had a bit of a meltdown. So I was like, yeah, that's why you just put the snack out. Even if they say they don't want it, put it out. He'll probably like nibble on it later because he'll see it, and you can prevent those hangry episodes. So it's just a good reminder. I was like, you know, he's older, but maybe he doesn't know best in that respect yet. And, you know, he may if he doesn't eat the snack, even if it's there, but I'm just going to put it out next time. So that was my mess up.
Yeah.
But the good news is, as they get older, they actually like, so he had his meltdown and kind of had his moment, but then he says sorry a lot quicker. So he's learning, like, you know, kind of his emotions still can get the better of him, but then he, you know, responds quicker and then apologizes and gives us a big hug and then comes and sits down. So it's getting easier as he's getting older, but he still can get hangry.
Well, that's sweet. And yes, that will happen to the best of us. So now, Lisa, what is the mama must-have that you have for today?
Oh, sure. I'll tell her a little hack we did for Stuart, because we didn't prepare him for the time change. So I was like, oh, I have this melatonin spray, and one spray is 1 milligram. So I was like, let's give him a spray of the melatonin. So we did it last night and the night before, and he fell asleep within a few minutes. And we also told him it was going to help him sleep. So maybe there was the placebo effect, right? He's like, how long is this going to take to work? And we're like, right after story time, you're going to be asleep. And he was. So that really worked. Normally, we try to like start to, you know, put him to bed a little. I guess I was getting mixed up with how you would do that. But yeah, we put him to bed like a little earlier, I guess, with this time change, and wake him up a bit earlier. But we weren't doing that. So my hack was a little bit of melatonin for him. Have you ever used melatonin on Frankie? Tony?
Yes, that was definitely my hack for last night, because the same. I just wasn't prepared to get her ready for the time change. And so, yeah, absolutely. A little bit of melatonin.
Usually, they don't need much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually use less than a milligram, but absolutely. I'm with you there, Lisa, for sure.
For sure. For sure. Nice. And what's your mama must have outside of the melatonin, Tony?
Well, my mama must have for this week is definitely the 4-sigmatic mushroom coffee. I'm not much of a coffee drinker, but on a day like today, where we're after the daylight savings time change when we're recording this right now, it's really my a go-to, absolutely necessary. So my favorite tonic for daylight savings time for all of those parents out there. Mushroom
love it
coffee.
I can tell you're full of energy. I'm like, I need a cup.
I definitely needed it before recording today.
And the spotlight was on you, but you were clear, concise. I loved it. So,
no, it worked. Thanks, Lisa. And that's why it works. That's right. So why don't I just go ahead and share with everyone what else is happening with us. My next hypnobirthing session for expecting parents looking to decrease fear and anxiety and to support their natural instincts around labor and birth is happening next month. So I have one next month and this month. So anyway, you can join me at hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register. And then Lisa's free webinar, How to Thrive in Perimenopause and Beyond, is happening on March 29th and April 3rd. So you can sign up for that. There's a link in the show notes. And you can also join Dr. Lisa's Facebook group, Wild Woman Adventures Toronto. If you're in that area, you want to get out in nature, connect with other women, and push yourself out of your comfort zone. So thanks so much for joining us today. Again, you can check out our show notes at our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. You can email us, connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We would love for you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And if you found this episode helpful, feel free to share it with your perimenopausal mama friends. That also really helps to spread the word. So stay safe and healthy, everyone.